Hello, fellow runners. Welcome to The Law of Running, the first and only podcast that helps runners understand their legal rights. I'm attorney and runner Steve Eggergard. One of my favorite places to run is next to the Mississippi River here in the Twin Cities of St. Paul and Minneapolis. I live on the St. Paul side, so that's where I find myself most often. If you're familiar with the Twin Cities, or you've run the Twin Cities Marathon, you probably know the area because several miles of the Twin Cities Marathon use that route. If not, you probably have a favorite running route similar to it. There are separate paths for pedestrians and bikes, so it's a popular place for runners and pedestrians in general, and of course, dog walkers. And when it comes to dogs, I would say their owners are pretty good and seem to get the idea. They're sharing the space with runners and others. They keep their pets on leashes, as the laws require them to do, by and large at least. And although I've been chased by a fair number of dogs in my 34 years of running, I cannot recall being chased by a dog or feeling threatened by a dog on the paths next to the river or some of the paths around town that are similar to it. But that's not true in residential areas, and that's where I run most often. Typically, I'm just strapping on the shoes in the morning and heading out for a few miles right from home. It doesn't happen a ton, but it happens more often than it should. And when I'm pursued by a dog, it's typically an unleashed dog, usually an unfenced dog. And let's face it, the dog is doing what dogs have an instinct to do, and that's to run and to chase. And as runners, we are seen as particularly susceptible to that, I think. So in the city, there are fences where dogs are kept contained. Suburban areas, they have fewer fences, of course, and rural areas sometimes have no fences, at least not fences that are designed to keep dogs under control or on the dog owner's property. And I have to be honest, most of my negative interactions with dogs have occurred in rural areas where I run there sometimes, not a ton, but my worst experiences with dogs have been on rural roads. There, dog owners seem more inclined to let their pets run free, or maybe the dog owners are maintaining their animals as a way to protect their property. And they do have a right to do so, at least with respect to trespassers. And, you know, I don't blame the dogs, particularly those dogs that have been conditioned to run free, that are not used to being on leashes or behind fences. From the dog's perspective, the urge to chase, it's difficult to restrain. And that's why we have leash laws, to impose legal obligations on dog owners to keep us safe from their pets. Now, it's true that leash laws might not be as strict or plentiful in rural areas, but in the cities where I run most of the time, the leash laws require dog owners to keep their laws restrained. And I've been thinking more about leash laws these days, during these days and weeks and now months of social distancing, is I've been exploring some new streets around town, and quite honestly, I'm avoiding some of the places like the crowded Mississippi River paths, where by and large, the owners are keeping their, dog owners are keeping their animals on leashes, but I'm going there less often just to do my part with respect to social distancing, and maybe you've been doing the same. And in my runs the past couple of weeks, in exploring some of these streets I haven't been on before, I'm encountering fewer cars, which is a good thing. Fewer people are out and about, of course. But I'm also coming upon homes with dogs I have not seen before, so I'm looking at it with sort of a critical eye. And again, by and large, in my part of St. Paul, the dog owners are pretty responsible, even on some of these streets where I've never been before. The past few weeks, I can't really say I've been chased by an unleashed dog or one that has gotten free from a fenced area. I've been barked at a lot the past several weeks, but I haven't been chased yet. But to be honest, I'm sort of waiting for it to happen as I explore some of these new areas. It comes to mind a few years ago, not so far from home, but in an area where I don't run very often, I ended up being chased by a small dog. And you probably have a story like this too. It started out as not too bad of a situation, not terribly threatening at first, but soon that single little dog was joined by a friend, and the two together forced me to transform my run, which I had intended just to sort of go out for a few miles of a light jog, a leisurely day out on some streets. Before I knew it, it ended up being a speed workout, which most definitely was not in my training plan at the time. So I had to change things up a little bit. Those two dogs together were a lot more aggressive when they are teamed up together, even though they were small. I had to put things into high gear. It took a good block before I was able to shake off the dogs. They were right on my heels. I did so by leaving the sidewalk and running in the street and subjecting myself to potential injury by a car or tripping in a pothole or something like that. And thinking back on it, I recall thinking that if I come upon a car, I might try and use the car as a weapon, as of self-defense, maybe dart in front of the car with hopes that the car would help fend off the dogs. Now, you know, thinking back, that would be a pretty dangerous thing to do, but I was feeling pretty threatened by those dogs. I was really kicking it into high gear at that point, and they were right on my heels. And if I had been injured by avoiding those dogs, what were my rights? You know, I got to thinking about that, and you've probably been thinking about it too in a similar situation. What are your legal rights? So that's the subject of this podcast law, of this podcast episode. And I will say, dog bite law, it's sort of a niche area of law practice. The laws can be more confusing with respect to dog bites and dog attacks than you might think, and they do vary by city and state, so a bit of a legal disclaimer here. If you find yourself in a legal situation involving a dog bite or some other injury caused by a dog while you're out running, reach out to a lawyer in your area, because I'm not in a position to give you legal advice, and this can't be legal advice on this podcast. So reach out to a lawyer in your area if you feel that you need help. I can say this, though, to get you started. In general, the laws are tilted in our favor, and that's a good thing. The laws are tilted in favor of the victims of dog bites and dog attacks, or just potential dog bites or dog attacks if you're trying to escape a dog. The laws themselves, they're not written to blame the dogs, and I personally don't blame the dogs, and you probably don't either. They're written to blame the dog owners and to encourage the dog owners to keep their animals under control. Those dog owners are the ones with the legal responsibility to anticipate their pets can do, and they do chase runners. So, you know, keep in mind, this much is true. We have a right to pass by a house or a homestead in a more rural area, and we have a right to do so not only by walking, but running. We have a right to run on public property. But there is an important caveat here. We need to make sure we're on public property when we do so. Okay. In my case, when I got chased a few years ago, I was on public property because I was on the sidewalk, and then I felt that I needed to veer into the street. But the situation could have been a lot different if I had been on private property. In that situation, if I had been bitten or otherwise injured, or if you are bitten or otherwise injured when you're on private property, be careful. Our violation of the law can negate these legal protections that tilt in our favor in general. But here's the deal, my fellow runners. A lot of states have what are called strict liability statutes, okay? The concept of strict legal liability comes up most often in cases of things like ultra-hazardous products or substances. If you want to keep a highly toxic chemical around your house or in the garage, you can do that, but under the law of strict liability, you might be liable, you might be strictly liable if somebody gets a hold of that and gets injured because of it. And your argument that, look, I didn't intend to hurt anybody, or I was trying to do my best to keep this dangerous thing under control. Under the law of strict liability, that just doesn't matter. Fault is imposed without regard to fault or whether you intended to hurt somebody. Traditionally, and we learned this in law school, the law of strict liability, it's applied to wild animals. So that's what you learn in law school. So if you live in a rural area and you want to keep a tiger, well, okay. There might be statutes against that, but even if there are not, the law of strict liability probably is going to kick in. And so in that instance, you have a legal obligation to keep everybody safe from your pet tiger. Well, here's the situation. Under the strict liability laws in some states, not all states have this, but several do, Dog owners don't want to hear this, but the law of strict liability essentially can treat those pets as wild animals, at least with respect to potential injuries. And this is where that distinction between public and private property comes in and when it's really important. In a lot of states, these laws, these strict liability laws, do not apply when we are in a place where we do not have a legal right to be. And when we are trespassing on private property, we do not have a legal right to be there. So, as you explore some new streets or maybe some new rural roads during this time of social distancing, be careful. Be careful to stay on public property whenever you can, particularly if you are in a situation where you feel you might be encountering dogs. But if you're on public property, say a rural road you've never run on before, or a sidewalk in a neighborhood you've never run on before, and you encounter a dog and you're pursued by it, well, the law might be in your favor, but you have more immediate things on your mind. You just need to protect yourself, right? And there are some legal principles that apply to self-protection. Although the law does not have a lot to say on this, and really it's a matter more for the dog experts and the animal behaviorists in the end. I was drawn to an article in Runner's World. It's back in 2010, and the headline is pretty straightforward if you want to Google it and give it a read. The headline is, "What to Do If You're Attacked by a Dog." What to do if you're attacked by a dog in Runner's World back in 2010. Pretty straightforward. You can Google it and read the whole thing. In general, the article says be boring. Slow down. Slow your run to a walk. The article quotes an expert who says that the prey instinct that dogs have, it's triggered by fast movement, and slowing down makes you seem less interesting. Don't stare, because that can be seen as a threat to the dog. Turn around, walk the other direction, but sort of keep watching out of the corner of your eye. Let the dog win is sort of the ultimate advice. Now, let's turn to the law. Winning in court if you're attacked by a dog. The law is tilted in our favor, but still, it's not easy, even though those laws favor us. Besides strict liability laws, which not all states have, every state is going to have the law of negligence, and it's tilted in our favor as well. It's not written down like statutes and ordinances are. It can be harder to pin down. It's based on the theory that each of us, runners, dog owners, whomever, each of us has a legal responsibility, legal obligation to act reasonably. So dog owners who let their pets run free, they're not acting reasonably. And that might even apply in a situation in a rural area where the leash laws are not as stringent. The law of negligence applies everywhere. And in many cases, the dog owners who let their pets run free, they're breaking the law, because those leash laws, they require dogs to be restrained. So then the subject comes to fences. Well, will a fence work? Well, a fence works only if a fence works, and I'm talking from a legal perspective. From a lawyer's perspective, if a dog can escape a fence, well, there's an argument that the dog owner did not act reasonably and therefore is negligent. And in states with a strict liability statute, the chances of liability for the dog owner is even higher in a situation like that. The excuses of, well, I tried with the fence, they're not good enough under the law of strict liability, and might not be good enough under the law of negligence either. Importantly, this principle extends to invisible fences. You might be familiar with invisible fences. They send a slight shock to the collar of a dog when it strays too far. And, well, again, you know, if the batteries go dead, or the dog finds a runner just too irresistible, and so irresistible that the dog wants to chase instead of be restrained by a slight shock to the collar, the dog owner might be liable in that situation. The argument that, well, I tried with the invisible fence, that might not be good enough. It's also worth pointing out that the laws might be triggered if we're injured just trying to escape a dog that's chasing us. If a dog owner fails to keep the pet restrained and it chases us and we trip while doing so, or if we get hit by a car or a bike while we're doing so, the law might hold the dog owner legally liable. That's sort of how it plays out. Now, most of the times, these sorts of cases are matters for the civil courts, where a runner would be the plaintiff and the runner would sue a dog owner on theory of negligence or maybe strict liability. Those are personal injury cases. And if you find yourself in that position, I cannot stress enough, reach out to a lawyer in your area. Lawyers who take cases like this usually will have websites that say that they specialize in dog bite law. It's a specialty, so you can find them through Google. And occasionally, cases involving dogs that injure or kill people move from the civil realm into the criminal courts. It does happen. Doesn't happen a lot, but it does happen. And dogs kill people, and dogs can and do kill runners. In my book, The Law of Running, I tell the story of a 20-year-old runner in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. The runner weighed less than 100 pounds, and he was pursued and killed by a dog whose owner let it run free. And not only did the owner know the dog had been running free, the owner knew he was violating the city's leash laws. So the prosecutors in North Carolina, and this was back in 1989, so it's been a lot of years, but the prosecutors back then, they did something unusual, and it was seen as unprecedented at the time. In that situation, they charged the dog owner with manslaughter. It's a crime that's punishable by prison time. It's a serious crime. Went to a jury trial. The jury found the dog owner guilty for the runner's death. And he was sentenced to prison. He went to prison. He was sentenced to 5 years after the attack. And the case ran its way through the North Carolina court system, reached the state Supreme Court in 1994. So nearly 5 years after this happened. And finally, the court upheld the outcome in that case. So criminal sanctions can be possible in situations like this. And of course, this case is an extreme example. And most interactions runners have with dogs are less violent than that and less tragic with that, but still the injuries can be very serious. And so the laws are tilted in our favor. So it's good to keep that in mind as you're exploring some new streets and roads these days during these weeks and months of social distancing. And above all else, my thought for you is, the main takeaway is make sure you are on public property, particularly if you think you might be encountering dogs. Your legal rights are stronger on public property. Don't do something that might provoke the dog, because in those situations, these laws, strict liability dog laws that are tilted in our favor, they might not be applied. They might not apply when we are said to provoke a dog. So be careful. Use common sense, because even if the law is on our side, dog bites and other injuries caused by dogs, they're painful for everybody involved, of course. That's, of course, runners, the dog owners who might feel really bad about a situation, or potentially the dogs themselves. Depending on what actions the dog owner would be required to take after an attack, that might even result in the dog being euthanized, and that's typically not a good result for anybody, of course. So those are my thoughts today here on the Law of Running. Thanks for listening. Go to my website, lawofrunning.com, to find additional content and a link to where you can order my book by the same name. Thanks to Cabalistic Village for the theme music. Visit composer Menachem Engel's page on SoundCloud. A last word with a legal disclaimer. I'm not giving you legal advice, and I cannot give you legal advice because the laws are different in every state and nation. So if you need legal help, reach out to a lawyer in your area who knows the law the best in your area and is best positioned to help you out. So for now, thanks for listening. I'm Steve Aggregard, and this is The Law of Running.